I've had a few moments here and there with students, teachers, college-aged students preparing for graduation. And I keep reflecting on those moments. In the Northeast, it was mid-June, towards the end of the school year, and you'd start to feel it getting warmer, and your seat would be a little sticky from the heat, and you could count the days till the end of the school year, and you started to think about what you were going to do on that last day of school, and what plans you had for the summer, and you could feel the days creaking away, but not fast enough, a countdown to the last day of school. And the countdowns in life to a graduation or a promotion, or in the case of one person in this room, conversion, in the case of another person in this room, her bat mitzvah, which will occur, interestingly enough, on Shavuot, which is the end of the count of the Omer period, where a little bit past the middle of it right now. And this is the parasha, as I mentioned in this morning's teaching, that teaches us, that describes to us the bringing of the first sheaves of grain, that we would watch them grow and bring them forward to the priest and lift them up and wave them somehow. It's not entirely clear. And that was a period before one would have breads or breadstuffs in one's home, a period of great anticipation, perhaps anxiety. I mean, I don't think I felt a huge deal of anxiety about the end of the school year, but as we count down, let's say, to getting a test result from a doctor, or preparing to see our GRE scores, or preparing to find out about our evaluation at work, countdowns can precipitate and bring with them a lot of anticipation and anxiety. Our sages knew that. I think that image that they have of the sheaves growing in Leviticus is a pregnant one. It's an image of growth and potential that's not yet realized, and curiosity about what will come. And that, in almost every metaphor that our sages offer, is a parable of faith. That faith requires slowly watching the grain grow and not knowing how good the harvest will be, how much food we'll have in our stores, but being patient and hopeful and optimistic and trusting, most of all, faith is about trust, that there will come an abundance. The Talmud says that Rabbi Eliezer the Great says that if you have a piece of bread in your basket and you're still asking, what shall I eat tomorrow, that marks you as one of little faith. There are similar statements in Greek scripture and Christian scripture as well, that all we have to trust in is the day, as the aliyah that was read prior to Dalia's aliyah, during Dalia's aliyah, said it's a daily thing, yom b'yom b'yomo. Each day occurs in its own time, and that's about all we're vouchsafed in the world. You don't get promised much in the future, and you can't count on what happened in the past easily. But at the same time, what's interesting when people evaluate their lives, as you'll see if you read the book, I think it was in Being Mortal by the doctor Atul Gawande, that the merits of one's life are not a continuous thing, but rather a continual thing. We don't view our lives as a continuum. We view them much more as a string of pearls, of pieces of moments that sustained us and brought us to this moment and the moments that we'll see in the future, maybe the birth of a grandchild, maybe a new job or a new career, maybe new love, new potential, a new synagogue for some, God forbid. But those moments are like pearls on a string, and that's largely how we experience life. And this week's parasha gives us the Jewish pearls, is like the Parashat Pinchas, tells us the details of our holidays, which are called Moadai, God's seasons, the appointed times of God's that are callings to holiness, which you shall call out or use or enact at their appointed time. I think it was in last week's parasha, or the parasha of Celia's bat mitzvah, actually, that talked about a timely person. That there are moments that are assigned and discreet and unique and perceptible, and that's what life is made up of. The moments in between when we answer email or stare out the window are less significant than the moments of tears or pain or joy or cries of joy or a great movie or a great music. And our sages knew that. The Torah knew that. The Torah knew that it doesn't have much accounting for what to do at 10:02 p.m. on a Tuesday, but has a lot of accounting of what to do over the course of a year and over the course of a week, and how to make of one's life a structure of moments. So the Maharei Yecheskel, one of our later sages, describes seasons, describes these holidays. I love this metaphor. Through the parable of a king traveling through the desert with his son, the crown prince, and they got thirsty. So they didn't dispatch a horseman, they didn't dispatch a rider ahead to fetch water from the nearest town. The king ordered a well to be dug at that spot as best they could, and to find water in place and to then mark it. And accounting for such an odd behavior, I mean, it would be easy in a king's retinue to send someone ahead and gather a barrel of water or a canteen of water. But the king said that this is a sort of planning for the medium and long term. At the present time, we could obtain water very quickly by sending a rider ahead, he notes. But perhaps one day, many years in the future, you, he's speaking to his son, the crown prince, or maybe his daughter, the princess, you might again travel this path, and you'll be alone. And maybe, God forbid, at that time, you won't have the power and prestige and privilege that we have at this moment. Maybe you'll be struggling in the world. Then, says the king, the well that we dug today will be there for you to quench your thirst, and it will be marked. So even if the sands of time fill up the well, you'll know where to dig. You'll know how to reopen it and follow the signpost we set. People of Israel wandered in the desert. In Leviticus, they're given a lot of rules of how to prepare for their lives, lest they lose track of what happened to them in their blissful and early marriage with God in the wilderness. So God established for us festivals at those points when God initially granted us the gift of freedom on Passover, the gift of joy on Sukkot, the gift of revelation coming on Shavuot. God sets up in Torah moments for us. Shavuos in East St. Louis, Hanukkah in Santa Monica. Times to be, and times to appreciate, and times to anticipate, and times to look back on. Already setting up guideposts. I mean, as a rabbi, you look at this parasha as a series of minefields. Oh my goodness, I have to prepare for Passover, and then there's going to be a Shavuos tikkun, and then there's going to be Purim, and so on and so forth. But really, for a good Jew, it's a string of pearls, a string of beautiful moments to appreciate and look forward to along the way. Because life can wear you down in the interim. Answering 50 emails in an hour, answering lots of complaints or tsuris in one's job, or dealing with patients or clients or students who are recalcitrant, is not easy. Trying to train people to do things they're not accustomed to is a source of struggle. God knew, Torah knew, our tradition understands that life has its challenges and we need respites and we need goalposts and signposts and markers and wells along the way that will satisfy us and quench our thirst and make us joyful. And as I noticed, one of the big aliyot in this week's triennial reading centers around Sukkot. And unusually for the rest of the aliyot, the aliyah of Sukkot interrupts the description of how you'll observe the Sukkot to tell you why you'll observe the Sukkot. Because God placed you in Sukkot, and it's not clear if that's a place or the actual tents and huts themselves, that you should rejoice. Which is also a very odd and anomalous situation. There's no other holiday where we're told how to feel about the holiday except Sukkot. And as anyone who's tried on Purim or Simchas Torah to feel joyful, it's not easy to turn it on a dime. It's hard. You get to Purim, you may have had a bad day at work, you get to Simchas Torah, it may have been not the greatest Sukkot for you at all, and to turn on the joy is a difficult practice. It's not unnatural. So what do we do? How do we shepherd those moments of joy, that little cache of joy we have along with us that we might keep in our pocket between holidays, between the beautiful moments of a child's birth or a niece's bat mitzvah or a promotion we might receive, or a joyful book we might experience? How do we shepherd ourselves from moment to moment when joy is, by some accountings, not the natural state of things? Life is often struggle. Life is, by its nature, challenging. We're wired for it. Children are wired for struggle, and if you haven't figured that out by the time you're 50 and you still think every moment should be easy, it's a big disappointment. because life has its challenges. That's the nature of being, that we work to be happy, that our nature is not easy, that it's better than when we lived in caves and had to fight saber-toothed tigers for our food. It is nice to be outside the food chain, but working in an office, working as a physician, working as a physician's assistant, working as a grant writer, they're just not easy jobs. Life is full of challenge. Children, grandparents, aging parents, it's all an effort. So how do we shepherd that joy? I think one of the first lessons, and Sukkot teaches us this as well, I'm trying to think how to put this in just the right words, is that joys can be very small, that we have to appreciate the fine things, that we shouldn't look for the perfect moment. No one's ever had a perfect Purim or a perfect Sukkot when the sukkah just went on just perfectly. That's also even one of the points of Sukkot. They're ugly. The etrog is ugly. I have a rabbi who, my mentor, used to pick the ugliest etrog he could find as a way to remind himself that God appreciates us all, whether we're spiritually beautiful or spiritually not, so we can return the favor and pick ugly etrogs. And all the effort that people put into getting just the right lulav and etrog is wasteful, he thinks. God appreciates us as we are. Can't we give that same honor to the beautiful fruits and species of Sukkot? And there's a Hasidic saying that sukkah, that entering the tents, the huts of Sukkot, is the only mitzvah you do that you can enter with dirty boots. Everything else, Shabbat, you're supposed to put on your nice clothes. But Sukkot, we imagine that we do it in the fields. We do it as we come out from our harvest. That it's okay not to be perfect, that you should enjoy life anyway. That even if 30 things are going wrong, if you can focus on the one thing that's sweet, that's touching, that's tender in the moment, that's the way to organize your life. And we get this, there's also in this parasha, not just holidays, so that's a bulk of this week's parasha, but some information about sacrifices, and we're told all the things that can make a sacrifice non-usable, that make it unfit for sacrifice. And among them are extended limbs. If I guess a cow has one leg that's too long, I don't know enough about animal physiology and zoology to tell you exactly what they're referring to, but we're told that those are useful for some sacrifices, but if an animal is somehow impaired in that way, you can use it for a free will sacrifice, but not for a vow sacrifice. For a nidava, but not a neder. I think a piece of what's that saying is, yeah, you're imperfect. Your life is not even. Things are awkward. Accept yourself the way it is. Enjoy those moments of joy with your dirty boots and your imperfect life and your awkwardness and your as-yet incompleteness, and savor it. Hold on to those moments of joy. Don't focus on the things you're not yet achieving, because you'll always feel that way in life till you're 90. I don't think 100-year-old people are yet complete, are yet totally fixed. I think they've just made more peace with it. And the last piece of advice, in addition to looking behind and looking ahead for those special pearls on the beads of our life, on the strings of our life, and being generous with what we account as a valuable and joyful moment, and being patient and forgiving and accepting of our own flaws and disabilities, is to be scrupulous in shepherding our joys, to keep them tight in our pocket, not stingy, but to watch out for them. We're told that the priests have to be careful with their priestly foods. They should be scrupulous. The verb is yinazru, to be fastidious. Watch out for your moments. Keep those pearls safe somewhere. Don't look for just the perfect pearls. Be happy with small and poorly formed pearls, as long as they bring you joy. Look ahead and look behind for beautiful moments and holidays and moments of loving with one's family and by oneself. And shepherd those special moments through all the other challenges in your life.